You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, July 29th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Donald Trump complains no one likes him. But on the bright side, Louis Gohmert tried to give him COVID. Meanwhile, Democrats' oversight remains weak. But Bill Barr, at least on the defensive yesterday, in front of the Judiciary Committee, the Republican Corona Relief Bill, a non-starter, according to the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Democrats add to their suite of housing relief on the verge of an eviction surge. As we speak, an antitrust hearing on the Hill featuring some of the biggest sociopaths in the country, CEOs of Amazon, Google, Apple, and Facebook. Meanwhile, the EPA's inspector general to investigate Trump's CAFE standards rollback, and the Trump administration no longer taking DACA applications in defiance of the Supreme Court. House Republicans looking at a loss of dozens more seats in November. And the federal government just announced to withdraw its forces from Portland. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday. We will take your phone. We may take some phone calls and IMs in the fun half. I don't know. I say that often and we never get there. I'll say this again. I don't know. Maybe I planned not to say it after yesterday, but I'll say it a couple more times. Through the week. It is a because people are coming back to the show for the first time after our time off. It's going to feel weird. It's going to be weird with Michael's passing, and there are going to be times we're going to reference him and mock him and reference how he would have mocked probably me, but maybe others. I don't know. It's just gonna feel weird until sometime, hopefully, in the future, where it doesn't feel as weird. I don't know what else to say. There's no reason not to acknowledge that going forward. There's gonna be times it's gonna be sad, et cetera, et cetera. But that is that's where we're at, and we will forge on. Last night, Matt and David Griscom did a show with Leisha Brooks, Michael's sister, on TMBS that was a tribute to him. I would encourage you to go and check that show out. I really enjoyed it and thought it was wonderfully done. And there was a lot of great voices on there. And you get a real sense of just sort of how wide a net Michael was able to cast in a relatively short period of time. So worth checking that out over at youtube.com, The Michael Brooks Show. And looking forward to seeing what those guys are going to be doing in the future. Right, Matt?
Absolutely. We're going to keep on going after we take a bit to reform and recuperate a little bit.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And just get to, oh, let me, while we're talking about stuff like that, friend of show, Judy Gold, has a book out that I want you to go and buy. I don't care where you buy it. Obviously preferable an independent bookstore, but then if you can't find it at an independent bookstore, get it at a non-Amazon store. And if you can't find it at a non-Amazon store, I don't know why that would be the case, and buy it through Amazon. But however you do it, go out and buy it. Do we have a screenshot of her book? Yeah, here it is. It's Judy Gold's Yes, I Can Say That. When they come for the comedians, we are all in trouble. Now, to be honest with you, I haven't read the book yet because, for whatever reason, I didn't get it in advance. But I mean, I feel like I could get in an argument about this with Judy. We'll see. I don't know if I want to do that, but get the book, support Judy Gold. She's very funny and has been a longtime friend and supporter of the show. And we will have her on in the next week or so, I think. So check that out. Also, just a little house cleaning. Yesterday, I was talking about the absurdity of the arguments, and we'll hear it from other people. You know what? Actually, maybe we'll wait, because I think some dumb Republican governor made a point about masks too. That just seems to be like the idea that we're in this position where we're arguing about the efficacy of masks, or even it's not, you know, look, there was controversy over the efficacy of masks related to COVID-19. I think early on there was a sense that there might be a run on masks and they needed to keep them. And I think the other sort of misconception early on was that the disease was more transmittable by touch than it was by air, essentially. And it wasn't for a month or so that the epidemiologist started saying, I mean, I remember at one point, I don't remember, Brendan, maybe you'd remember when we had Michael Osterholm. Is that his name?
Michael Osterholm. Dr. Osterholm.
I'm not sure when we had him on. He's one of the top epidemiologists in the country. And he said there were three major factors in terms of transmission: air, air, and air. But that wasn't, I think, until, you know, maybe late April.
April 29th.
Yeah. So, prior to that, certainly in the first month, there was a sense that what you got to be really careful about is touching something and then touching your mouth. So you wash your hands, you got to wash your packages, you got to wash all that. And then it became clear that no, the primary vector for transmission was the fact that the virus could be aerosolized. And maybe I'm saying that incorrectly. But we'll get on to that, because I got a good comment on the YouTube that scienced up my point about the size of the coronavirus versus the size of a CO2 molecule. And I just didn't know enough science to do it. All right, well, here, this is sad. Donald Trump is really lamenting that nobody seems to like him. And I guess this is maybe part of the healing process where he admits this out loud. Play this clip.
We could have gotten other people. We could have gotten somebody else. It didn't have to be Dr. Fauci. He's working with our administration. And for the most part, we've done pretty much what he and others, Dr. Birx and others who are terrific, recommended. And he's got this high approval rating. So why don't I have a high approval rating with respect, and the administration with respect to the virus? We should have a very high, because what we've done in terms of, we're just reading off about the masks and the gowns and the ventilators and numbers that nobody's seen. And the testing at 55 million tests, we tested more than anybody in the world. I have a graph that I'd love to show you. Perhaps you've seen it, where we're up here and the rest of the world is down at a level that's just a tiny fraction of what we've done in terms of testing. So it sort of is curious a man works for us, with us very closely, Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx, also highly thought of. And yet they're highly thought of, but nobody likes me. It can only be my personality. That's all. Go ahead.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, he's got. I mean, I'm sure his personality has something to do with it. It could also have something to do with the fact that they've tried to demonize the one guy giving some type of accurate information throughout this. It could also be that he refused to take this seriously for months before that. It could also be that they are refusing to use the Defense Production Act to ramp up testing, that they have been hostile to the idea of testing. It could also be that people are getting a little suspicious about the numbers that are being reported out of states since the change 2 weeks ago by sending the information directly to the White House versus the CDC. It could be the fact that Donald Trump just sent unnamed federal police squad to rough up peaceful protesters in Washington, D.C., and then in Portland.
I mean, there's a whole host of reasons. But specifically in terms of Fauci, I think it really must center around the fact that Donald Trump has all but, wasn't he out of touch with Fauci for like 2 months? Do we even know if they're still they're talking at all?
I'm not sure.
But now he wants credit for bringing him in. He was already there. Isn't that the critique of Fauci, that he's deep state Obama? Here is Donald Trump. Still on, I mean, someday someone's going to figure out what's going on with the relationship between, let's say, Fox News, Donald Trump, and hydroxychloroquine. Now, it could be they will find out at one point that hydroxychloroquine, in conjunction with the use of, you know, five other things at a certain stage of the process, has some positive impact, right? I mean, they could find that out about something, but none of these people have done that research. Like, it is just bizarre. His determination to make hydroxychloroquine the cure for all of this, so much so that he ends up promoting a doctor who, well, I'll read a little bit more, but I'll just say two words for you, I'll say four words. Alien DNA and demon sperm. Play this clip.
You said it was a great doctor, and that video that you retweeted last night said that masks don't work and there is a cure for COVID-19, both of which health experts say is not true. She's also made videos saying that doctors make medicine using DNA from aliens and that they're trying to create a vaccine to make you immune from becoming religious.
Well, maybe it's a sign, maybe it's not, but I can tell you this. She was on air along with many other doctors. They were big fans of hydroxychloroquine. And I thought she was very impressive in the sense that from where she came, I don't know which country she comes from, but she said that she's had tremendous success with hundreds of different patients. And I thought her voice was an important voice, but I know nothing about her. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
I guess he didn't want to answer that question. Didn't she come from Houston?
Yes.
The doctor, apparently, and I, you know, I'd be a little concerned about a doctor, frankly, who is credentialed and licensed, who is talking about medical treatments, medicine coming from the DNA of aliens. Apparently she was in Congress on Washington. She was at Congress. She was in Washington to lobby Congress on Monday. This is according to Will Sommer in the Daily Beast.
And she said that the government is run in part not by humans, but by reptilians and other aliens. Now, metaphorically, I think there's some validity to that. But this is literally what Gary Busey was telling me.
Not medically, right? This is metaphorical and not medically.
Metaphorically, I think, yeah. I buy the reptilians and the changelings. But I would say that no, alien DNA is not the source of medicine, and that gynecological problems like cysts and endometriosis are not caused by people having sex in their dreams with demons and witches. Now, I'm not a doctor, so please.
I've watched enough House to know not to cross things off the list too early. So.
Yeah, okay. Well, fair enough. I'm not a doctor. So listen, I am not suggesting that there are no implications to having sex with demons and witches in your dreams. I don't want anybody to go out there and do this and then, you know, find and then come back and saying, you said it was okay to do that.
Yeah, we are not liable for.
Right. You know, I just want to make that absolutely clear. But I do want to say that I do think that there is a significant dearth of evidence that cysts and endometriosis are caused by having sex with a demon or witch in your dreams. Now, in real life, if you have sex with a demon or a witch, I could see that there might be some problems.
I mean, use protection. Same rules apply.
Yeah. In fact, I would probably use two. I would double the protection if you can with the demons and the witches. So, wow. Apparently somebody's made, you know, apparently like he's really just like retweeting these things and doesn't even realize.
Am I wrong? She was Turning Point, right? Or Turning Point was, yes, at least tweeting her
there's
video.
There's an interesting sort of timing with this, because in the way that social media companies have taken the videos down at the same time that there's the hearing today, and I'm sure Republicans are going to be talking about censorship of ideas. It's all coincidental.
Do you think that they, are you speculating that they put that up as a way of basically just getting these guys to take it down so that they could talk about that? Because I
think that's certainly possible. Yeah.
Oh, that's very possible. I'm looking right now at a Jim Jordan memo that Matt Stoller got a hold of. On this hearing, in fact, the guidance memorandum provides background in advance of the hearing, including themes and questions to consider given the opportunity to engage with all four CEOs. Hearing themes. And number one is political bias in big tech is a problem that must be highlighted and examined so the consumers are aware, the market can respond, and lawmakers can evaluate options. That's number one theme that they want to push here, is that these big tech is against things like spreading the truth of cysts developing from having sex with witches and demons.
Also, as like a little button on this, this is not fake news, according to Stella Emanuel herself. She said this the following.
The Daily Beast did a great job summarizing our deliverance ministry and exposing incubus and succubus. Thank you, Daily Beast. If you need deliverance from these spirits, contact us. Okay. I mean, fair enough.
I mean, I would just say, does this look like a guy who wants you to know the truth about witches and demons?
There you go. And people should know that when I said sociopath up at the top in my headlining of their appearance, I was really thinking of him, of Zuckerberg. Folks, as you know, life can get busy. It feels like you never get to spend quality time with family and friends. And these days, it's hard to find a way of doing it safely, frankly. But Hunt a Killer is a new way to do game night. It gives us the opportunity to have fun, work together, investigate crime without even having to leave the house. Hunt a Killer reinvents the way we interact with murder mysteries. You go from being a viewer, safe in your couch watching, to an investigator actively involved in solving the case. It's a murder mystery subscription box. It has over 2,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot. I'd put one on there, make that 2,001. With each delivery, you sift through piles of documents, evidence, audio recordings, case files. You eliminate suspects until you crack the case. You can even join Hunt a Killer's spoiler-free online community. It has over 100,000 members, so you can share theories and help each other out. Myla and I have been playing various now episodes of this game over the course of, I feel like it's been maybe a year. I have no idea now. I can't even tell time. But the biggest, it's a ton of fun. It's great. It is not, you don't need a screen to do this. It's worth it just to get your teenager off the screen for an hour, as far as I'm concerned. But it's a ton of fun. The biggest problem we have now is because of my custody arrangement with the kids, that we get into arguments about moving forward with the case without each other. So that is the only issue, because I like to do it together. But it's a ton of fun, and it's good for teens too. Right now, just for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority. Use the promo code majority at checkout. You get 20% off your first box. Head to huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off. Show support for our podcast. Have some fun. huntakiller.com/majority. All right. Let's get into, I just want to give you a sense of, before we get into the bar clips, just give you a sense of what the state of play is for the coronavirus relief, because a lot of people are running up against the end of federally enhanced unemployment. They are running up against the ends of both federal and now state and municipal moratoriums on evictions. I still don't know how people are going to pay that back. Quick breakdown of the HEALS Act. They spell it H-E-A-L-S, but it really should be H-E-E-L-S Act. Presented, thank you, Brendan, presented by the Republicans in the Senate. Unemployment insurance immediately falls from $600 a week to $200 a week. That is the federal supplement to unemployment. And all of these, this breakdown is coming from David Dane over at The Prospect. When you combine that with what the states offer, that's on average a cut from $920 a month to $521. A week to $521 a week. That's around 43%. After 2 months, the states will figure out how to individually replace 70% of lost wages. It's just it's so Byzantine. There's no way that's happening. There's not enough money that they could pay these state agencies to be able to figure it out. It's just, they will just go with the $200. The federal stipend counts as income relative to determining your eligibility for other federal benefits. So it's conceivable if you get that extra $200 a month, and without it, you're on food stamps, that you could lose your food stamps. It's just absurd. There's a second stimulus, $1,200 for adults, $500 for dependents. That's capped, I think, if you're up making up to $75,000 in personal income. Rebates are protected from bank garnishment or levy or private creditors or debt collectors. After the first CARES Act, Dayan and the folks at The Prospect found out that there were banks just taking the money that was, to pay back whatever, bills or collection agencies or whatever it is. And so that's not going to happen now. There is about $100 billion, a little more for hospitals. There's $100 billion for education split between K through 12, with a significant portion of that only for schools that reopen in the fall. There is no other money for state and municipalities in this bill. And then, of course, there's $29 billion for defense contractors and the F-35 because there's almost $2 billion for a new FBI headquarters because that's very COVID-y. And then there's a massive liability protection. David Sirota did some very good reporting on this. The liability protection that Mitch McConnell is pushing that would prevent people from, and understand, there is no rash of lawsuits that are happening right now. The question is to what extent do private companies need to make sure that they are doing everything possible to protect their workers and to protect consumers who come in to buy stuff. And without the threat of a lawsuit and with a defanged OSHA, there is a huge incentive for these entities to cut corners. Places like Amazon, places like, warehouses, food processing plants, meat processing plants. If they feel they have complete liability protection and they know OSHA is not on the job, what is their incentive to not take that risk? They could be worried about, losing their workforce, but in this environment, I imagine they might be able to find more people, and certainly they would think so. The liability protection that Mitch McConnell has submitted was exactly like the one that Cuomo wrote for New York. Word for word, cut and paste. So add that to your bucket of stuff why Andrew Cuomo sucks. His interests align very often with Mitch McConnell's. It's just a lot quieter about it. There is no extension of the eviction moratorium. There is no money for the Postal Service or no money for the November elections. There is no hazard pay for essential workers. There is no OSHA standards for workplaces, right? That's why the liability is so important. There's no money to shore up pensions. There's no funds for people who lost employer-sponsored health insurance. There's no increase to food stamp benefits. And none of the $1 trillion in new money for state and local government. So that's where we're at. I mean, we had talked about the House version, the Heroes Act, I guess it was called. The House version, of course, is the one that the Democrats have put forward. There's some decent stuff in that one. There's some crappy stuff in that one as well. They have just, on yesterday, Ayanna Pressley, Rosa DeLauro, Kamala Harris introduced the Housing Emergencies Lifeline Help Act. It allocates $10 billion in emergency solution grants. That's actually like providing emergency housing for people. It also provides billions for tenants to hire attorneys going into housing court. Apparently, studies show that tenants are do far better when they have representation in the courts. I mean, that's sort of obvious. Now, that is in and of itself is insufficient. But remember, it was the beginning of June or the beginning of July, the Democrats passed a standalone bill that was. I think it was Maxine Waters proposed. It was the Emergency Housing Protections and Relief Act of 2020. And that had $100 billion for emergency rental assistance programs $75 billion relief fund for homeowners. And it would have also extended the eviction and foreclosure moratorium for a year. I don't know if that money would be sufficient, but it's, you know, all this stuff is theoretical on some level. It's just a question of whether they can get the Republicans to sign off on it. I doubt it. And I don't know. I think there's probably an argument that maybe when you offer multiple, pieces of legislation within a suite, it diminishes the pressure. But I don't think the Republicans are going to go for rental assistance. It's good that the Democrats are passing this in the House and that it's there, and that that it would create pressure on a Democratic Senate to pick it up if we find ourselves with one in January, because we're going to need the same thing then, if not more. But it's there anyways. There's a whole suite of housing things. At least there's some recognition that there is a disaster that is we're facing in terms of housing in this country. It's going to happen very shortly. So, all right, let's get to some of these clips from Bill Barr yesterday. Again, this is one of those situations where it's like, the Democrats, the oversight the Democrats have done since 2018, and remember, this is one of the themes anyways that they were elected on, was oversight of the Trump administration. I would argue it's probably the biggest one. That's why they did so well in 2018, because it was a referendum on Donald Trump. And their oversight has been anemic at best. The impeachment was too narrow. They just simply, and I understand they've been roadblocked, but that doesn't mean you can't have hearings. That doesn't mean you can't have an empty chair there. And I think to a certain extent, the reason why they're three quarters of these Democrats in there are so inept in asking questions of Bill Barr is because they don't have any practice. They haven't had enough times to realize, like, these people can't ask questions. Let's bring in professionals to do it. Nevertheless, I do think there is value in any day that Bill Barr is not at the Justice Department figuring out how to get federal police into a city, or figuring out how to write a brief to the Supreme Court as to why the election results don't count, or is not out there trying to create, and remember, they pushed off that Dunham investigation to October. Now, I don't think that's going to mean anything. But there has been a longstanding agenda out of the Department of Justice to impact the election, either beforehand or after the I mean, that's what, when Bill Barr was going around, he was in the Czech Republic, looking for backup on the investigations either into Biden and Burisma, or to claim that the Ukrainians were the ones who interfered in the 2016 election. All of this, understand, all of that is the Department of Justice, the head of it, attempting to influence the election in the fall. And I have no doubt he's going to do it after the results are coming in. I mean, remember, we still don't even know who won in Karen Maloney's district in New York. And that election was over a month ago. So the idea that we're going to have states that because of COVID and just problems in general that aren't going to be able to give us the results on the night of the election, there's going to be a week maybe where we just don't know. And all that's going to be going on are going to be charges levied from the White House and from the Department of Justice that there has been some shenanigans. The vote, the mail-in, the millions of undocumented being, you know, bussed up to New Hampshire. I mean, all of this is going to happen. They did it after the last election and he won. And so keeping Bill Barr on the defensive, discrediting Bill Barr, every tiny bit of it is important. making sure that the media does not accept Bill Barr's version of events like they did when he came out and lied about what was in the Mueller report. Making sure that the Supreme Court knows this guy is toxic, and that, and go read on what was written. I think it was in the, Post? I had it right here. There's been a couple of good wrap up pieces. It was in the Times of the negotiations that are going on in the Supreme Court right now. This is a body that is very, very conscious of what's going on politically on the ground, and very, very conscious of horse trading and of how they're coming off publicly. And to have Bill Barr put up there and at least somewhat discredited is a huge benefit to everybody, as far as I'm concerned. Brendan, were you going to tell me what that piece was? Do you know what I'm talking about?
You're talking about the one with the unnamed sources talking from SCOTUS?
Yeah, I don't know if it's not the CNN one. There was another one. I can't remember what it is. I have it here somewhere, but people can find it. It was a big one. I think LGBTQ was in the title, because I think that was what they were. That was sort of like the peg. All right, but let's go take a look at some of the questioning that took place with Bill Barr. Let's start with Pramila Jayapal. She is curious as to why Bill Barr was so in touch with what was going on in Portland, but not so concerned about what was going on in other states over the past 4 or 5 months.
On two separate occasions, after President Trump tweeted, "Liberate Michigan," to subvert stay-home orders to protect the public health of people in Michigan, protesters swarmed the Michigan Capitol carrying guns, some with swastikas, Confederate flags, and one even with a dark-haired doll with a noose around its neck. Are you aware that these protesters called for the governor to be lynched, shot, and beheaded?
No.
You're not aware of that?
I was not aware of it.
Major protests in Michigan. You're the attorney general, and you didn't know that the protesters called for the governor to be lynched, shot, and beheaded. So obviously you couldn't be concerned about that.
Well, there are a lot of protests around the United States. And on June 1st, I was worried about the District of Columbia, which is federal.
In parts of the country, you're very aware of those. But when protesters with guns and swastikas
I am aware of protesters in the federal government.
You are aware of certain kinds of protesters, but in Michigan, when protesters carry guns and Confederate flags and swastikas and call for the governor of Michigan to be beheaded and shot and lynched, somehow you're not aware of that. Somehow you didn't know about it, so you didn't send federal agents in to do to the president's supporters what you did to the president's protesters. In fact, you didn't put pepper balls on those protesters. So the point I'm trying to make here, Mr. Barr, that I think is very important for the country to understand, is that there is a real discrepancy in how you react as the attorney general, the top cop in this country, when white men with swastikas storm a government building with guns. There is no need for the president to, quote, activate you, because they're getting the president's personal agenda done. But when black people and people of color protest police brutality, systemic racism, and the president's very own lack of response to those critical issues, then you forcibly remove them with armed federal officers, pepper bombs, because they are considered terrorists by the president.
Now, and the bottom line is, and some people have parsed this out and said, in Michigan, we're talking about the state house. And so, and he tried to make that argument that I was worried about Washington, D.C., because that's federal. But we do know that these federal policemen, or whatever they were picking people up on the streets of Portland. They weren't just staying at the courthouse. We do know that there have been plans drawn up to deploy these federal cops to other cities in the country, Detroit, Chicago, New York. Now, to my knowledge, there's been no, you know, assaults on federal buildings there. So that distinction, I think, is convenient, but I don't think it's terribly accurate. And, you know, everything we're seeing from these hearings, to a certain extent, is geared, I think, towards essentially the election, obviously. And I would have liked to have seen some actually like legitimate oversight. But Barr is pretty slippery, and a lot of them don't have the ability to do it. But at least in terms of getting an effective message out there as to that Bill Barr is a compromised attorney general, I think that's effective. Here's Ted Lieu testifying to the House Judiciary Committee that, or I should say, questioning Bill Barr during his testimony and explaining to Bill Barr why unmarked van arrests are unconstitutional.
This is not a trick question, Mr. Barr. I'm just citing you what the Supreme Court said. So here's a problem. Under this standard black letter law, which has been in effect for over 40 years, what the federal forces in Portland did was unconstitutional. Federal forces in full combat gear, in the dark of night, grabbed a protester who was peacefully standing there, forced him into an unmarked van, drove him to a separate location, searched him, detained him, and questioned him. That is what police states do. That's what authoritarian regimes
do. But I don't think those were the facts.
I haven't asked you a question yet, Mr. Barr. Okay. What the federal officials did was illegal because they didn't have probable cause. And how do we know that? Because Deputy Director of the Federal Protective Service, Chris Klein, admitted it on national TV. Deputy Director Klein said that the individual that they were questioning was in a crowd and in an area where another individual was aiming a laser at the eyes of officers. That's guilt by association. That's what the Fourth Amendment prohibits. Deputy Director Klein further stated that the protester was released after federal officials concluded, quote, they did not have what they needed, unquote, which again shows there's no probable cause. And it appears that federal Deputy Director Klein appears to understand that there was no probable cause because he essentially justifies that action as saying it wasn't an arrest. He calls it, quote, a simple engagement, unquote. I'm a former prosecutor. I've never heard that term, a simple engagement, because it's a made-up excuse. What these federal officials did was an arrest. They grabbed a peaceful protester. They forced him into a van, drove him to another location, questioned him. That is exactly what the Supreme Court prohibited over 40 years ago.
Bill Barr's not even listening. But it's important that these markers are put down. And I think, like I say, we just heard, and I'm not convinced, frankly, that it's not a function of this hearing. The governor of Oregon, do you have that, Brendan? Can you put that up, the announcement that the governor of Oregon announced, I don't know, 45 minutes ago, that federal officers will be retreating, I guess, from Portland. And I'm not convinced that it wasn't a function of that hearing. It put some pressure. Here's Kate Brown. After my discussions with Vice President Pence and others, the federal government has agreed to withdraw federal officers from Portland. They have acted as an occupying force and brought violence. Starting tomorrow, all Customs and Border Protection and ICE officers will leave downtown Portland. And then she goes on to say, our local Oregon State Police officers will be downtown to protect Oregonians' right to free speech and keep the peace. Sent to the Black Lives Matter movement's demands for racial justice and police accountability. It's time for bold action to reform police practices. So there it is. All right, let's play one more clip of from there, and then we'll head to the fun half in a moment. This is pretty important. Like I say, the idea of is it Richmond about the Do we have Richmond? Is it which the ballots? On the ballots. Oh yeah, here it is. Okay. Yeah, here's number 16. They are trying to lay the groundwork. The president has done this, and so has Bill Barr. That vote by mail is going to be fraudulent. And so really important that the Democrats brought this up in this hearing with Barr. Here is Cedric Richmond and Bill Barr.
In your position as the Attorney General of the United States, is Russia attempting to interfere in the 2020 presidential election?
I think we have to assume that they are.
Thank you, sir. Now, let's talk about the integrity of the election, which is also something Congressman Lewis fought for. Jared Kushner implied that the president could move the election day. Can a sitting U.S. president move an election day?
Actually, I haven't looked into that question under the Constitution.
Well, 2 U.S. Code, Section 7 says federal election day is the Tuesday after the first Monday in November. So if you take that as a correct statute, is there any executive action by a president?
I've never been asked the question before. I've never looked into it.
As Attorney General of the United States, do you believe that this 2020 presidential election will be rigged?
I have no reason to think it will be.
President Trump tweeted that the election will be rigged, but he also tweeted that when he was losing to Hillary Clinton, and he tweeted that the day after it was Fox showed that he was losing to Trump. But I don't want to be too political. Do you believe, as the Attorney General of the United States, that mail-in voting will lead to massive voter fraud?
I think there's a high risk that it will.
Do you ever vote by mail-in ballot?
Apparently I did once, at least.
But you believe that other people voting by mail could lead to massive fraud?
No. What I've talked about, made very clear, is that I'm not talking about accommodations to people who have to be out of the state or have some particular need not to, inability to go and vote. What I'm talking about is the wholesale conversion of election to mail-in voting.
You do understand that African Americans disproportionately do not survive COVID-19 coronavirus. You are aware of that.
I didn't hear the question.
You are aware that African-Americans, black people, disproportionately die from COVID-19 coronavirus, correct?
Yes, I think that's right.
And not that it would be the first time that African-Americans would risk their lives to vote in this country to preserve its democracy. But the suggestion is that them having the ability to vote by mail would somehow lead to massive voter fraud, but I won't stick to that.
No, I didn't say that. I just state, I think, what is a reality, which is that if you have wholesale mail-in voting, it substantially increases the risk of fraud.
But it doesn't make it likely.
That's all I said.
Now, I also saw on TV that the president said he's not sure that he'll accept the election results. Can a president just protest because he lost an election?
Protest in what sense?
Well, can he contest an election just because he simply loses? Well,
Gore versus Bush v. Gore was...
Well, I think that was over a slim voter margin. I'm talking about if it is very clear that the president has lost an election, does he have a remedy to contest the election?
Not that I'm aware of.
All right. The bottom line is there's no evidence. Is he getting into the evidence thing there, Brendan, or is that it? There's no evidence of the assertion that vote by mail leads to any more potential for fraud than anything else. There have been 5 states that already had it before the pandemic: Colorado, Hawaii, Oregon, Utah, and Washington. There's no evidence that their vote by mail system was in any way subject to massive fraud. There's no reason to believe that people who vote because they have a reason to vote by mail as opposed to vote by mail are any less susceptible to that fraud either. Let's go. There's one other clip on that regard, and let's just play it because it really needs to be on, you know, people need to be aware of this, because when he is talking about, here's more. This is Mary Gay Scanlon. She's from Pennsylvania. And she asked Bill Barr, this is clip number 5.
Mm-hmm. Because we have a large population of seniors who are at higher risk for the coronavirus. They shouldn't have to choose between risking their lives and exercising their right to vote. But the problem we're facing is that the president has repeatedly sought to cast doubt on the security of mail-in ballots, saying that the 2020 election could be rigged with, quote, millions of mail-in ballots printed by foreign countries, end quote. And you, sir, have repeated this disinformation.
Well, it's not disinformation.
I don't have a question for you yet. Here it comes, though. Last month, you echoed the president's conspiracy theory when you suggested in at least 3 interviews that, quote, foreign countries could manufacture counterfeit ballots, end quote, to influence the presidential election, correct? You did that in at least 3 interviews?
Yes.
Okay. But in fact, you have no evidence that foreign countries can successfully sway our elections with counterfeit ballots, do you?
No, I don't, but I have common sense.
Okay, well, and that's what you responded when you were directly challenged on that. You said, no, you didn't have evidence, but it was obvious. According to state election officials, your alleged concerns here are not obvious, but in fact are outrageous. Every state in the union has absentee ballots. 2/3 of the states allow for vote by mail for any reason. 5 states, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, Hawaii, and Utah, vote entirely by mail and have done so for decades. Even the U.S. military uses mail-in ballots, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay. So isn't it true that after you suggested without evidence that foreign adversaries could sway our elections using counterfeit ballots, election experts and officials from around the country said that what you suggested was virtually impossible, preposterous, would never happen, and would be readily detected due to the multiple levels of security used with mail-in ballot systems?
There are not multiple levels of security.
Okay, well, so...
And I don't agree. I don't agree that it's a...
reclaiming my time. And again, I'm happy to supply you with the statements that were
before
provided
Donald
from
Trump
around the country.
Raised concerns about
in
it. Every
fact,
major publication...
Reclaiming my time, sir. In fact, there is no evidence that foreign countries can make counterfeit ballots and create a real threat to our election security. Are you aware that in May, the president tweeted, and I quote,
pause it for one
mail-in
second.
Voting...
I just want you like contemplate the idea of Russia or China or France creating all these ballots, bringing them to the United States, right? Because they got to be postmarked. You can't mail them from the country, right? So you smuggle in these ballots. You go into, I guess, key counties, right? Because you're going to be sophisticated about this. You send these guys in with, like, I don't know how many ballots they're going to know. You know, how do you guess? I mean, this is something he's saying. It's common sense that they could do this. So let's just work it out common sense wise, because we're not going to listen to the experts. We're not going to listen to the people who run the elections. It's common sense. So you smuggle it in, right? In a duffel bag, the ballots, the fake ballots. And these guys are good, right? Because what these secret agents have done is they've gone in and they probably infiltrated the county election board to get a sense of what the ballots are going to look like, right? I mean, you'd have to do that because, like, I mean, it's not, it's not like there's just a ballot that says, you know, Donald Trump and Joe Biden. There's a whole ballot with local elections. So you gotta fabricate those. You got to bring them into the district, I guess, so you don't have a foreign postmark. And you mail them from the district. You got to know the names of the voters and hope that those voters are not sending in their ballot too. Otherwise, they're going to get 2 ballots from Brendan and from Matt. You guys have moved, let's say, you know, theoretically to, some
Broward County.
Broward County, maybe want to move up to Michigan. It is like of the myriad of ways you could imagine interference in election, this would be the last way that people would do it. I mean, I guess you could say, like, you know, maybe there could be hacks into voting systems and, you know, you prevent people from voting. Or this,
I was going to say the machines would be where I would start my investigation.
The idea that you're going to produce, you're going to be able to replicate a certain county's ballot and then figure out a way to have it mailed locally with names of people that wouldn't show up to vote is so absurd that this guy should not be hired to be the local dog catcher. Never mind. Just the concept of that is so outrageous. It's so ludicrous. It's insane if he believes that. I'd be more concerned if he actually believes it than the fact that he's just being lying about it.
Yes.
I mean, it's so absurd. Let's continue to play this. I think Scanlon's doing a decent job here, but how absurd this notion is not even, and the idea that anybody's interviewed him before and he's given any response other than, yeah, no, that's absurd. Of the myriad of ways that one could worry about election security, the idea of a foreign government producing counterfeit ballots and being able to sway an election, you know, highly unlikely.
Back to our election security. Are you aware that in May, the president tweeted, and I quote, "Mail-in voting will lead to massive fraud and abuse. It will also lead to the end of our great Republican Party," end quote.
I wasn't aware of that tweet.
Well, that tweet suggests, sir, that the president is spreading disinformation about mail-in ballots because he's afraid that if more people vote, he and his party will lose. The fact, Mr. Barr, is that our foreign adversaries cannot actually influence our elections by submitting massive counterfeit ballots, but the FBI and our intelligence services have repeatedly warned that those adversaries are actively trying to sow mistrust of our election systems, and by repeating disinformation about mail-in voting, you and the president are helping them. Just switching gears, you would agree.
Well, I'd like the opportunity to
respond.
You would
agree that prosecutors who make political contributions are identifying fairly strong.
There you go. Good for her. But there is no response to that. That's exactly what he's doing. I don't know that he's doing it at the behest of a foreign country, but the idea of going out there and saying that mail-in ballots are susceptible to being counterfeited and somehow mailed in by foreign adversaries I think you'd have a tough time doing it unless you were like the election committee of a county. You need all the people on there who are all going to conspire to do this. We're just going to create fake ballots. But then I think you got other problems. They would probably find an easier way of doing it. But that's that.
I mean, I don't think Barr does believe it. I think he's afraid of enfranchising people.
Well, I think he's afraid of enfranchising people. I think he's afraid of it because he does see it as a potential, and I don't even think this is necessarily accurate, as a potential way of bringing new voters in. I mean, there's really mixed data, in terms of if there's any benefit to one party or another with these ballots. But I do think what he's really doing is they are trying to set predicates. They are trying to get premises and predicates into the bloodstream of our media and our common knowledge, right? Common sense that the mail-in ballots are questionable, period. So that in the event that Donald Trump loses and there are states that have mail-in ballots, they don't have to argue the premise. They just argue the conclusion. And that's what they're trying to do. That's what they were trying to do with all of the Ukraine stuff. They're trying to lay a premise so that Donald Trump has some type of argument. And so that's why this, you know, that line of questioning, at least in terms of the integrity of the election and getting Donald Trump out of the office if he loses, is the most important thing right now on some level. That is no mystery. However, this is. I'm excited to introduce you to one of the coolest sponsors we've had, Hunt a Killer. It's a murder mystery subscription box. It's one of the most unique games out there, and it brings the fun of an escape room to your home. Go to huntakiller.com/majority. Use the promo code majority at checkout for 20% off your first box. That's huntakiller.com/majority. Promo code majority. Folks, we're going to head into the fun half. Just a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Check out the AM Quickie. You can find it at amquickie.com or on any of your podcast services. We also have it on our YouTube channel, our second YouTube channel. That's Majority Report Live, youtube.com/majorityreportlive. Go head over to TMBS, youtube.com/The Michael Brooks Show. You can see the really great tribute that Matt Griscom and Alicia Brooks put together for Michael last night. Also, check out Nomi Key's show. You can find it at youtube.com/The Nomi Key Show or also patreon.com/The Nomi Key Show. She also had a lovely tribute to Michael with Anna Kasparian. They talked for an hour. You know what I wanted to do? Maybe I'll save this for the fun half to talk about Gohmert, and I've got a drop for it. But Jamie, you there?
Hello.
Hello. You want to talk about what's on the Antifada this week?
Sure. So this week on the Antifada, we speak with Wilfred Chan, who is a contributing writer to The Nation and also part of the Lao San Collective, about the uprisings in Hong Kong. We go a little bit over some of the history of Hong Kong's struggle against British colonialism to its rejection of being China's neoliberal window to the world. And we talk about what's happening there right now. Some of the tactics that protesters are using there, particularly against the police, are spreading to other parts of the world. He acknowledges fully the reactionary elements in these protests, but makes a very good argument for a kind of leftist internationalism that doesn't abandon people and movements just because they are messy and full of contradictions. Finally, we discuss the deepening tensions between the U.S. and China and the prospects of World War III. So that's out now for everyone to listen to for free. Check it out, patreon.com/theantifada.
World War III would round out 2020 nicely. We've got a bunch of different options. apparently last week there was some writing in the Times that suggested that some defense contractors suggested that there was like a lot of UFO activity. Like there was some type of vehicle they had. I got to go back and look at that.
That's a question for AP Andy, I think.
Well, I think this is actually this is in the Times now.
This is Saber Adlin, you're saying?
Well, I mean, let's hope.
Honestly, if there are really aliens, fine. Like that'd be
that's what I'm saying. I am all in on the alien invasion. Count me in.
I'll be glad to be here for it.
Yep.
Honestly.
Yep. Either they're gonna wipe the slate clean if they're mean aliens, or they're gonna give us space communism if they're comrades. Or
there's also just like they show up and they go, got some bad news for you.
We love the GOP.
This Mitch McConnell guy looks like us. Pretty cool.
We're just barely advanced from you, and we tend to be a little more conservative than our.
We like Persuasion, the new Yasha Monk outfit. We're centrists.
Or if they just show up and they go, we're just advanced enough to build a ship to get here, but we really got nothing else. We got no other answers.
Yeah,
we have a slightly better fake meat product, but that's about it.
We're looking for Dave Rubin's house.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to read the work of Jay Posadas, all right? If they evolved interstellar travel without destroying their planet, they probably evolved past capitalism, and they're nice.
Maybe. I don't know if that necessarily follows, but it's possible. They could be a lot. I mean, I guess if they're using their, but I mean, who knows? Maybe they're,
I mean, the frontier, as like as a place for capitalist development is always, I mean, that's the reason Elon Musk wants to go to Mars.
Right. I mean, the other problem could be just like, oh yeah, we're here to extract your resources.
I mean, that's what we would do if we had interstellar travel, but we haven't really gotten past that bottleneck yet. Now, have we?
We have not. And I guess
then we won't.
Yeah, I don't know if we will, but it could be just like, yeah, no, we're more developed, but we're just better at imperialism than you. That's all. So we're just going to extract your resources and good luck to you. I mean, you had it coming. That's that could be what they say. We don't know.
Matt, time will tell.
Matt, are you doing any literary hangover?
I'll probably stream sometime in the next week or so. And then Alex and Grace are going to take over more of the grunt work on Literary Hangover, but it will continue on. So.
Okay. All right, good. We will take a quick break. We'll take your phone call. 646-257-3920 is the number. And you can IM the show via our app at majorityapp.com. You can pick that up. It's free for iPhone and free for Android, majorityapp.com. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back. Back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back. Back. Back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck! Reminder!
Have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych.
Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
Almost says what?
A hell of a lot of back. A hell of a lot of back. A hell of a lot of back. Hell of a lot of back. Hell of a lot of back.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
Come on.
Really? Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.